Welcome to Health Styles. I'm Diana Mason, one of the producers of this program that's brought to you by the Center for Health, Media, and Policy at Hunter College, City University of New York. After decades of the exclusive use of infant formula being viewed as an indicator of social standing and class in the United States, breastfeeding rates in this country are on the rise. But we still have a long way to go. While 75% of American babies are initially breastfed, only 35% are being breastfed exclusively at 3 months. Last year, Save the Children issued a report on the state of the world's mothers that included a breastfeeding policy scorecard. The U.S. ranked last on that scorecard. The scorecard included things like mandates for employers to provide any paid maternity leave after a woman gives birth, and whether the country enacts into law the provisions of an international code for marketing breast milk substitutes. The U.S. requires neither. And yet the evidence on the benefits of breast milk continues to pile up. In fact, breast milk is now used as an intervention to treat very sick or premature newborns who cannot take milk by mouth. And here to talk with us about breastfeeding in the U.S. is Dr. Diane Spatz, a registered nurse and professor of perinatal nursing at the University of Pennsylvania School of Nursing, where she holds the Helene M. Scher Chair in Nutrition. She's also the director of the lactation program and a nurse researcher at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Thank you so much for joining us today, Diane.
Thank you, Diana.
So, Diane, tell us more about how the U.S. is doing on breastfeeding.
Well, we have, in the United States, made some nice strides in improving breastfeeding initiation. And as you mentioned, about 3 out of 4 women now start breastfeeding, which really only means that they fed their baby one time at the breast.
Only one time. That can be initiation.
That's initiation, absolutely, because what they do to collect that data is if the mother reported breastfeeding even just once in the birth hospital, she's counted as a breastfeeder. The fall-off rates for breastfeeding are quite rapid. And in fact, not only are about over a quarter of babies supplemented in birth hospitals, you will see that exclusive breastfeeding rates are quite low, and that at 6 months, it's only about 16% of babies. So we're in the 30% range at 3 months, and only 16% at 6 months. So for myself, as both a nurse researcher, educator, and clinician, I find this very alarming, because what this leads to in our communities is that we have what I like to describe is a community of disgruntled breastfeeders, women who tried breastfeeding, but for whatever reason were not successful, probably because they didn't get evidence-based support and care from their providers, even starting at the birth hospital. So we have so few women, less than 20%, breastfeeding exclusively for the first 6 months, that in the United States, women have very few role models for what breastfeeding should look like. And I find this to be so concerning. I actually just today was meeting with a woman who's going to have her baby at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia because of a concern related to the baby's brain. And she shared with me her first breastfeeding experience with her daughter 3 years ago and told me some of the information that she received from the birth hospital that just went against all evidence. And it's a real challenge, I think, still today, for us to help women make sure that they're getting the best start to breastfeeding so that they can be successful.
So let's talk about a concrete example. I hear women all the time say, well, I couldn't continue to breastfeed because I didn't produce enough milk for my baby.
So perceived insufficient milk supply. It's actually a worldwide phenomena. Women don't think their baby is getting enough, or how do I know my baby is getting enough? And I think in particular in our U.S. culture, we are so focused on numbers and measurement and time and being able to know exactly, you know, what's going on. To think about breastfeeding, women almost have to, you know, take a leap of faith that, of course, my breasts are going to work. Of course, this is what they're cut out to do. But if you start with breastfeeding, what you want to know is that in pregnancy already, the breast is preparing to make milk. So a woman starts secreting colostrum from about 16 weeks of pregnancy on. So even if she delivered a very preterm infant, her breasts are still prepared to make milk. The way that a mother knows how to continue to make milk is by the demand on the breast. So the more the breast is stimulated and emptied, the more milk that is produced. And this supply and demand concept can go on for as long as the breast is stimulated. The first week to two after delivery, though, is critical because the hormones of lactation are primed at that point. And so in the early breastfeeding experience, it's important for that mother to have continuous, uninterrupted skin-to-skin contact with her baby, a practice that many birth hospitals don't currently allow or support. The mother needs to be able to breastfeed the baby on the baby's cues without having to supplement the baby with formula. And she needs to be able to have time just to spend with the baby to breastfeed. And many women don't have accurate guidance or have realistic expectations about what breastfeeding is going to look like. And babies can eat a lot. Babies can eat every 2 to 3 hours. Research where we've looked at breastfeeding patterns of babies show that babies can eat anywhere between about 7 and 19 breasts per day. And that's a really big range of what normal looks like.
Feedings from the breast.
Like from one breast. So as few as 7, meaning one breast, and as many as 19, meaning they're always feeding from both breasts at once. So the baby will drive maternal supply, but if mom isn't counseled on what normal feeding behavior looks like, what feeding cues look like, because babies tell us when they're hungry before they cry, and what signs of satiation look like, moms might think a fussy baby is a hungry baby, but it's a fussy baby, and it has nothing to do with feeding. So this whole concept of how do I know my baby's getting enough is something that women do struggle with, and it's hard for them if they're also getting mixed messages about their milk supply from the start. So if they go into a hospital, deliver a baby, and they say, oh, yes, we want you to breastfeed, but you need to supplement your baby because your baby has lost too much weight or because you're not doing it correctly or, you know, whatever reason that they tell the mom. And so I think for mothers, oftentimes right away from the time of delivery or birth hospital, many women feel very vulnerable or they feel set up for failure because they're getting mixed messages about them about how to breastfeed and how breastfeeding should work.
So, Diane, you have a lot of experience with helping women, and often women who have difficulties with breastfeeding, to actually be successful. What percent of the women that you work with, or what do we know from the data, from research, what percent of women cannot breastfeed?
So, when you think about not being able to make milk at all, all right, unless a woman had no breasts, if she had breast cancer and had bilateral mastectomy and had no breast tissue at all, that's the only mom who's not going to be able to make any milk. Even when we have cases where a mother who has had breast surgery, for example, breast reduction, which can alter milk supply, or if a mother has a true condition called glandular hypoplasia, which means there's not a sufficient amount of glandular tissue that has developed, those mothers still can make milk. They may not, however, be able to make a full supply to exclusively breastfeed their babies. The incidence of true glandular hypoplasia is less than 2% of the population.
Okay. And so this idea of exclusive breastfeeding, one of the things you hear, if I'm breastfeeding my child, you hear that you're supposed to introduce solid foods at some point, or that you should have the child be used to formula just so that if something happens and you can't be there, that the child will be able to get nourishment.
So I really, when I hear people say, oh, just give the baby some formula to make sure the baby will take it, why? Why? If a mother can't be with her child all the time, we are fortunate enough to live in a culture in the United States where we have breast pump technology easily available. Women can get access to pumps at, you know, Babies R Us, Target. You can buy an electric breast pump for a pretty reasonable price. And with the Affordable Care Act, some women are beginning to see some better coverage for getting breast pumps and whatnot. But the idea that the baby needs to have something else is not based on research. And if you look at the American Academy of Pediatrics or the World Health Organization, they really emphasize that need for exclusive human milk feeds for the first 6 months. And when you talk about exclusive breastfeeding for the first 6 months, that's either direct breastfeeding at the breast or feeding that expressed milk via a bottle if mom and baby are separated. So our goal should really be to help mothers achieve that exclusive human milk feeding for the first 6 months. And right now, you know, as I mentioned, that's less than 20% of women who are doing that.
And so why is this so important? What are some of the, you know, it just sort of makes intuitive sense that the mother's milk is going to be better than any other milk. But indeed, there's been a lot of research on what some of the benefits are, and maybe you could share just a few of those benefits.
Sure. So one of the things that we know about breastfeeding or feeding human milk to an infant is that it's a dose-response benefit. And for different illnesses or diseases, a baby would have to have a different dose of milk to get a benefit. And so I'll explain that through a couple of examples. So for example, with gastroenteritis or diarrhea, okay, any amount of breastfeeding is going to decrease the baby's chance of gastroenteritis. It's about a 64% risk reduction just with any human milk in the diet, okay? But if you wanted to say, for example, have protection for the baby from respiratory illnesses or respiratory tract infections, the research really shows that you need exclusive breastfeeding for 4 to 6 months. If you look at something like necrotizing enterocolitis, which is a disease we see in babies in the NICU where their bowel dies.
Neonatal intensive care unit.
In the neonatal intensive care unit, the disease called necrotizing enterocolitis where the bowel dies is something that is a very scary and serious disease.
Yeah.
We know that if babies get fed human milk through their NICU stay, there's a 77% reduced risk in NEC. So, for example, in a neonatal intensive care unit, you really don't have any business putting anything but human milk into a baby's belly.
And
so,
if the infant can't nurse because they're too immature, they're too premature, what have you, the practice is now, the best practice is still to instill somehow the through a nasogastric tube into the stomach the milk because of these benefits?
Correct. So if the baby is doesn't have the gestational maturity to be able to coordinate suck, swallow, breathe, or if the baby had a complication, for example, cleft lip or cleft palate, where you wouldn't be able to directly breastfeed the baby at the breast, then we can administer mom's own milk through a feeding tube, an NG tube, which is a small tube that goes into their nose and their belly. There's also, with other types of sick babies, we can feed milk via a G tube, which goes right into their stomach. But the preferred form of not only nutrition but really medicine for a baby in intensive care is to get 100% human milk diet.
And Diane, I heard you speak a few months ago about how breast milk is being used to treat different conditions in newborns and newborns who cannot suck themselves. And you were talking about even just putting the breast milk in their mouths.
Absolutely.
Tell us about
oral
that.
Care.
Yeah, oral
absolutely.
Care.
So oral care with human milk, this is really an exciting thing to think about, because if you think about a healthy term breastfed baby, a healthy term breastfed baby is eating every 2 to 3 hours. So that means the inside of that baby's mouth is always coated with his mom's milk, okay? Human milk is a very powerful antimicrobial agent. So if you took a bottle of mom's milk or human milk and you put a bacteria in it, the milk would kill it. If you took a virus and put it in the milk would kill it. So by keeping the baby's mouth coated with milk, it's like a force field, really, or a frontline protection against infectious germs processes. Babies can also absorb some of the small proteins from mom's milk through their cheeks or through their buccal mucosa. So they can actually absorb some of the immune properties through their system, even without putting the milk in their belly.
It's fascinating work, and let me just remind listeners that you're listening to Health Styles, and we're talking with Diane Spatz. She is, a professor of perinatal nursing at the University of Pennsylvania School of Nursing, as well as the director of the lactation program at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. And we're talking about breastfeeding today. So, Diane, in the short time we have left, could you talk a little bit about, so if it has all of these benefits, what's our problem? What's getting in the way of having higher exclusive breastfeeding rates at 6 months?
Well, the list is pretty long, Diana.
What do you think is the most important factor?
I'm going to start with two things. First is hospital support, and then second is community support. Hospitals, all right? There is an initiative called the Baby Friendly Hospital Initiative, which involves 10 steps that help mothers get to the best start for breastfeeding. To be a baby friendly hospital, it's quite an intense process to go through that certification. And the hospital also has to not accept free infant formula. As you mentioned at the start of our interview, the United States is one of the few countries that has not signed on to the code of marketing for breast milk substitutes. So we definitely, in America, we're a capitalistic society and formula is big business. And so if you don't think formula is influencing, or the formula companies aren't influencing what is on Capitol Hill, then you're misled, because they have very deep pockets. So the support that moms get already in the birth hospital is not often ideal to get breastfeeding off to the best start.
But if but what you're saying is that if you go to a baby friendly hospital, it's called baby friendly hospital.
Yep.
That you can get, you can count on having that support. Is that correct?
Absolutely. And in New York City, you have Harlem Hospital, which was one of the first hospitals to become baby-friendly.
That's good to know.
But overall, it's only about 6% of births in the United States that occur in baby-friendly facilities.
Now, so, we should also point out that child birthing centers, freestanding birth centers,
absolutely,
have a higher rate of breastfeeding, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mothers who are cared for by nurse midwives and advanced practice nurses who give birth in freestanding birth facilities, absolutely, you see much better breastfeeding outcomes.
And what about community support?
So in the community, we have a community that of women and families who don't have a lot of breastfeeding role models. And so if you look at the father or the partner, if you look at the grandmother, many women today who are giving birth to children, they weren't breastfed by their mothers. So if their mother didn't breastfeed and she said, well, I formula fed you and you turned out okay, you know, she doesn't have the role models to be able to get the support. So mothers need support from their partners, from their family members, from the grandparents. They need support in the community to be comfortable with breastfeeding in public, that they shouldn't feel harassed by breastfeeding if they had to go to a store or to a mall. They need to be supported in their workplace to be able to express milk. And the Affordable Care Act has workplace accommodations, but those workplace accommodations are for women who are hourly employees. So it doesn't cover women who are salaried employees. So there could be the chance that a woman might not be supported at expressing milk at work, even if she is a salaried employee and has, for example, more economic means. So the Affordable Care Act, while it's great that we now have some law on the books in terms of the protection of breastfeeding upon the return to work, it really is not as strong as it needs to be to help women be successful. Women also don't know about the law. That's another big piece of the equation, because it's not like employers are actively out there saying, hey, we want you to breastfeed and we're going to make it easy for you when you come back to work.
So we were talking today with Dr. Diane Spatz, who is a registered nurse and a professor of perinatal nursing at the University of Pennsylvania School of Nursing, director of lactation program at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. And Diane, you have a longstanding reputation as a breastfeeding advocate. So for people who would like to do something about this issue, is there a way that they can contact you about what they might do in their own communities or workplaces?
Absolutely. The best way to reach me is if you go to the University of Pennsylvania School of Nursing's website, which is www.nursing.upenn, which is UPENN.edu. And on the School of Nursing's website, there is a faculty search box, And you can just put in my name, Diane Spatz, and it will give you my email as well as my phone number.
And the Spatz is spelled?
S-P-A-T-Z.
Great. Well, and I think you've given some great ideas for our listeners, and even for those who are not looking to be breastfeeding anytime soon, or maybe are way past that point, or never had the potential to do it, it is about creating healthy communities and healthy environments and healthy families. And so I would urge our listeners to pay attention to what is going on in your workplace. Is there a policy on providing women with the opportunity to express milk or to even breastfeed at work if they need to? And when you know somebody who's going to be delivering a baby in a hospital, ask that person, is this a baby-friendly hospital? And if not, maybe you ought to tell the hospital they ought to become a baby-friendly hospital or get other support, a lactation specialist who might support you through this very crucial time in your life and in your baby's life. So thank you so much, Diane, for coming on to Health Styles today.
Absolutely. Thank you, Diana.
So, again, please take some make some effort to try to improve what we're doing here in this country on breastfeeding. It's a really important issue. Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Diana Mason, one of the producers of Health Styles. Health Styles is brought to you by the Center for Health, Media, and Policy at Hunter College, City University of New York. You can follow us online at www.centerforhealthmediapolicy.com. That's centerforhealthmediapolicy.com. Have a great day.